So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least you got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's bowl.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine-clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's Imaginarium with Scott Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I am the horror nerd, Todd Struch.
And I apologize in advance for my voice, although it doesn't sound particularly worse than normal. I've got some kind of a chest thing going on, so I have a lot of coughing and plugged up sinuses going on, so excuse me. There we go.
Yep.
Coughs throughout the show.
That's okay. You can edit all those out, right?
Oh, I could. if I was so inclined to do that kind of work, which I'm not.
Yes, I totally get it.
So apologies in advance for that. You'll just have to deal with it today.
I am sure we will survive, my friend.
I've got the mute button right here, so I'll try and mute it when I know. I'm gonna cough.
All right, and I'll do the same thing when the aforementioned, well, before the show, I mentioned that my neighbor's landscaper is apparently using a 747 jet engine to clear all the leaves on the block at the same time. So, oh, my God.
I will, however, not mute it when I pass gas. That you'll just have to live with.
All right. Well, we'll just deal with that then.
You know, there's only so much a man can do. I can do the farts or the cough, but not both.
All right.
So we have a lot to go through this week. But before we do, I should say congratulations on another successful Grindhouse Nights.
Yes, thank you. We did have a great event. We had a really good turnout. Everyone enjoyed all the films. We had a lot of the filmmakers were in attendance, which is always fun. I like talking to them and having the audience participate. We do, you know, Q&A sessions after each film block, which is great. And just a lot of fun, and it's the same every single time. I become absolutely convinced that I have forgotten something very important, and something's going to go really wrong. And it doesn't. It runs smooth.
Yep.
Hats off to our venue, Crossroads, their sound team and their serving staff is top notch. Everybody had a great time. It was a lot of fun. All of the award nominees and winners are up at grindhousenightsfilmfest.com. So if you want to go see, you know, go check out who won the awards. We did have a couple of people bring this up, and I think we're going to do this next year. A bunch of people said, look, I wasn't able to attend in person. Where can we, is there a way we can stream the films? And the answer is no, not this time, but I think next time we're going to incorporate that, where you can view, you will be able to view the films online as part of the festival. I was resistant to it for a long time. It came about because of the pandemic, obviously. All the film festivals went online, you know? And to me, the joy of going to a festival is to meet and greet and network with people and talk about the movies. So I wasn't a fan of online. But I'm kind of okay with doing a hybrid version, A, because you're right. People are right. Hey, I couldn't make it, or it's a long distance for me to travel, but I still want to check out the movies. So I think we're going to do that next year. It's just, it's a lot of extra work, but people make a good point. And I think maybe it was a little foolish for being so resistant to it. You know,
you bullheaded about something. You being wrong about something. Has hell frozen over?
Listen, I was wrong. I thought I was wrong once before. It turns out I was mistaken.
Not this time, though.
No. So,
because I mentioned that a couple of years ago during the pandemic, I believe, because I would love to. And now I actually kind of have the wherewithal to put some money away and go to it next year. But it's something that I would like, you know, to attend or, you know, be a part of somehow. And even if you charge a nominal fee, you know, like, you know, $5 or something like that, for, you know, an online, you know, screening of the movies, you know, maybe select live parts like the awards or something like that. Not necessarily the entertainment, but the awards or the Q&As. I think you'd do well doing it that way.
No, I don't doubt it. When
I mean, yes, it is a lot of work, but it could be worthwhile.
Yeah, no, I do agree. And I discussed it, you know, with my team, and I discussed it with people who run, you know, hybrid festivals. And it's just, again, you know, it's just a matter of doing the work. Running a festival is a ton of work to begin with. So setting up an online version, but you know what, anything is doable. And it would absolutely be part of the festival. You know, it is a lot of extra work. And I do think that, oh, there's the jet engine. I don't know if you can hear it, you know, in the background. I'm like, I thought we were past that. But it would definitely be, you know, included. Like if you were an attendee in person, it would be part of your ticket. And then there would be a separate ticket, you know, if you were online only. I'd have to think of, you know, how that would work. But, you know. But yeah, it's definitely doable, and we're already have it on the slate for next year, so we can, you know, we can start setting that up. But overall, it was really good. People enjoyed the live entertainment. We got a ton of positive feedback, you know.
Awesome.
And I'm just waiting, you know, for the pictures from Dave, my event photographer, you know, to finish doing his edits and stuff, and then. I'm not sure if I want to document all the shenanigans publicly, but it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but I really enjoy doing it every year. So.
Well, good. Glad you had a good turnout for the middle of the week.
Well, it was the great experiment, you know, and it turned out pretty well. I think that, look, we've talked about this before. People will make time to do the things that they want to do. You know, if it's important to them, they'll show up. You know, we had one movie that was shown. There were like, in addition to the filmmakers, there was like 10 other people that came to support that one movie, whether it was a, you know, a friend of the filmmaker or a brother of someone who was in the movie. I thought that was so cool that they had such a contingent of people to come out and support their movie, you know?
That is cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, because that's what it's all about. Like, Tom and I have been very fortunate that when we screen a movie, we generally have a good, you know, group of people that will come out to support us. But I see it a lot of times, like, people work really hard on a movie, and then they'll screen it locally, and then there's, you know, like, nobody shows up. There's nobody in the audience. So I like it when people show up, but yeah, I talked to the venue owner and they were very pleased at the turnout, and that's what people need to understand. I need to balance my desire to have a good attendance at the gate versus keeping the venue happy because they're selling food and drinks all day, you know? So as long as they were happy, you know, and when the yeah. owner said, I think we should do it during the week from now on, I'm like, all right, well, say no more. I mean, done, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an experiment, and it seems to have worked. So there we go.
Yeah, and I think people want something to do during the week. Just kind of
yeah man.
Break up the monotony of, you know, get up, go to work, come home, shit, go to bed.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of went as expected. You know, the doors open at 4 o'clock, and there would always be like a few people that would come in at 4 just to see what was going on. And then the first film block is always a little bit light. But then once 6 o'clock rolled around and people were getting out of work or whatever, it really would pick up, you know, and that has always been the case.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not going to lie, it worked out better for me. Like there, when I would do it on a Saturday and we would get there, you know, we'd get to the venue like at 9, start to get set up and do everything. And then like the doors would open at 12 and the first films would screen at like 12:30 and there'd be two people there, you know? Yeah. I'm like, what's the fucking point of this? So I think I like it, you know, during the week. So there we go. I will, as soon as I, you know the dates, I will announce them early. So people can start planning their excuses for why they can't make it.
Yes.
You know, we need plenty of time for people to come up with good ones because trust me, dude. And this year I kind of just laughed it off because starting like the day before the event, the texts and the private messages and stuff will start rolling in and like people telling me why they can't make it. And people need to understand, like, of course I want people to come to my event, but if you can't make it, you can't make it. You don't need to explain it to me and you don't need to justify it to me. You know, just show up, don't show up either way. You know?
Yeah. I would much rather people just not show up rather than text or message an excuse. Cause the first thing we're going to think is, oh, bullshit.
Well, that's the thing. And for any event, not just mine, any kind of event, the more elaborate the tale you weave, the more it just seems bullshit to me.
Yeah.
You know, and especially, and this is sort of a public service announcement, when it's a public event, you know, it's one thing, like if you are RSVPing to a private event that say is catered and the headcount matters, you know, because you're ordering food for X number of people, or you need to know the number of tables or whatever, then it's kind of important. But when it's a public event, okay, don't show up. Yeah. I trust me, I won't notice unless it's like my dad, right? Like if my dad didn't show up, I would be like, huh, I wonder if he's okay, you know, because
yeah.
he's always here. Like, I wonder if something's wrong. But other than that, I am way too busy, you know, the day of the event to keep a mental note of who showed up and who didn't. So, but anyway, enough of that. Yeah, it did. It did.
All right. So we have celebrity deaths this week.
We do.
I'm shocked. I know. Celebrities dying again. The most recent one was Richard Roundtree.
Dude, that one came as a complete surprise because he was just at New Jersey Horror Con the weekend before.
Was he really?
Yep. I wasn't there because I couldn't make it. Like, so, you know, I had intended to go. And at one point during my event, my left knee just completely gave out. And I was hobbling around. So I ended up not going. And yeah, he was there. And then, you know, people no, I'm an idiot. It wasn't Richard Roundtree. I'm a fucking douchebag. Shut up. Edit all that out. It wasn't Richard Roundtree. It was
Edie McClurg.
Yeah, it's easy to mix them up.
But it is. It really is.
It was Fred Williamson. Was who the guy who was at? God, someone please shoot me.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah. Anyway, Richard Roundtree, who played Shaft, he died a couple of days ago.
Very, very influential in black exploitation.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth.
I would call him the grandfather of black exploitation.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt.
And don't feel bad about confusing him with Fred Williamson, because I thought he played Blackula too, but he didn't.
I just can't believe that I just did that. And dude, I believed it. Like, I believed it for the last like 4 days, like since Richard Roundtree died 2 days ago, I have been thinking in my mind, well, that's really weird. He was just at New Jersey Horror Con. Like, if he was so sick, how could he be doing a convention? And it never occurred to me that it was a different guy until just now. Oh my God.
Old age is a bitch.
Cognitive decline, dude. Oh my God. Yeah. I should just walk out into traffic.
Hobble out into traffic.
Yeah, that's true. Wheel myself out.
All right. And Piper Laurie also passed away.
Yes.
And that was the big one for me.
I'm going to laugh at you.
I also, well, you know, certainly as Carrie's mother in Carrie, but I have just as many fond memories of her as Catherine from Twin Peaks. Because she plays such a good heavy.
She does.
She just got the voice in the face for it. And because when you see her on screen, you think, oh, there's a bitch if I ever saw one. And she plays it to perfection. And I think I liked her as Catherine in Twin Peaks as much as, or maybe a little bit more than Mrs. White and Carrie. I think I like a little bit more, because as much as I love Carrie, it's one of my favorite horror movies, as much as I love her performance in that, it's a bit over the top. A little over the top.
Well, yeah.
But, I mean, the character kind of needs to be a little bit over the top, I suppose. But there was something nuanced about Catherine in Twin Peaks that I really loved. Then when she comes back in the show later on, dressed up as a Japanese businessman. And got away with it because I didn't know it was her until the reveal. And anybody who's seen Twin Peaks knows what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, you're, what the fuck is he talking about? you need to watch the entire show. It's a classic, probably absolutely one of the 10 best TV series of all time, in my opinion. And for me, maybe from the top five.
Yeah, so I think I may have said this on the show before, but I have never watched Twin Peaks.
Well, there's a surprise.
And for no real reason, other than I just never did. Like, not that it's not some, oh, I'm too cool for school bullshit or anything, you know, or it's just one of those popular shows that I just never got around to at the time. And I still haven't gotten around to. I probably should.
Dude, we used to have Twin Peaks get-togethers for every show. It started when I was still living in Arizona. Then I moved to San Francisco, the East Bay, actually. And if I wasn't working on the night that Twin Peaks was showing, some friends and I would get together, get some donuts and some coffee, and watch that week's Twin Peaks. I mean, that's the only TV show I've ever done that with. It was that kind of an event. And boy, people talked about that show the day after it aired. It was a phenomenon. and I really, I miss it. You know, I was so happy when David Lynch did the third season on HBO. And I really want more, but, you know, everybody from the series is dying off now or too old to perform. So, you know, of course, I'm too old to perform, too, but that doesn't
stop. Well, yes. But they have tools for that.
I knew you were going to say
that. Yeah, it was a little predictable of me. So another one of my favorite roles of Piper Laurie was in the movie Children of a Lesser God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really like that movie. That's one of my favorite dramas, you know? And I just immediately I thought of that when she passed away. She did a bunch of fan conventions over the years near me, and I don't know why I never met her.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I just, you know, I mean, other than it was the usual, well, there were people there that I wanted to meet more, and having limited money,
yeah,
I just had to take a pass. But people said that when they met her, she was really nice, you know. So now it's going to be one of those regrets. Yep. You know, that I never met Piper Laurie. But I really, you know what? I am going to watch Twin Peaks. I really need to just better understand it. Obviously, as part of pop culture, I'm well aware of it, you know. But instead, I'm rewatching the cheese fest that is Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Listen, Kevin Sorbo.
Oh yeah,
he's my favorite actor. You know,
yeah, you really do need to get some of that cognitive dissonance.
That's what I'm rewatching is Andromeda, because I'm like, I forgot how that ended.
Quickly and mercifully.
Yeah.
All listen, right, Suzanne Summers also died too.
I know. Oh,
strangled
God.
By her own thighmaster, apparently.
Stop it. God, stop it.
Too soon? No,
it's never too soon on this show. But the time at, you know, there were definitely a bunch of memes that came out about that when she passed away. You know, it's funny what people are remembered for. I clearly remember those commercials.
Yeah.
Probably because I rubbed one out to them multiple times.
My favorite meme was a picture of Suzanne, not Suzanne, the dark-haired one. What's her face?
Oh, Joyce DeWitt.
Joyce DeWitt. She's sitting on a couch with a skeleton on each side of hers, and the caption is, "Once company."
Damn.
Wow. I thought that was funny.
That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's really the only thing that I know her from is either Thighmaster or Three's Company. Well, and her cameo in John Waters' movie Serial Mom.
Yes.
Where she played a fictionalized version of herself. But really, other than that, I can't really name anything else. Oh, she's the sheriff. Was the show she did after Three's Company.
Well, she was also in a show called Step by Step.
Oh, that's right.
You know, but I never really watched that. Maybe an odd episode here or there. I just, it just didn't catch my attention, really. But yeah, that's too bad. There's one other person I want to mention. I don't want to say the death of anyone is minor, but in like celebrity world, minor. But Jeff Burr, who directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, passed away a couple of weeks ago. Oh, and nice. I just wanted to mention it because I met him several times on the convention circuit. I did an interview with him a few years ago. He also directed Stepfather 2, Pumpkinhead 2, a bunch of the Puppet Master films. And he was just one of those like mid-tier horror directors that was just a really nice guy, churned out like these pulpy movies that like horror fans just really loved. So yeah. I just wanted to mention his name because he was just such a super nice guy, you know, just lovable, you know?
Yeah.
And just made so many movies that, that people, that horror fans love. So RIP, Jeff.
Yeah. Did we talk about Michael Gambon dying? I think we did, but I can't remember.
I don't remember what I had for breakfast today.
Well, because I'm looking and he died September 27th. So that was almost a month ago. So I'm almost pretty sure that we did talk about it, but for the life of me, I don't remember doing it.
Oh, we did. Yes, we did.
Okay.
Now that I think about it, we did.
All right. Then we don't have to talk about him again. Was there anybody else you passed on?
Burt Young.
Oh, how could I forget?
Right. Paulie. Well, Paulie, and that one was a little, someone commented on Facebook. They made a weird comment. They said, how is it that we know whenever Taylor Swift is at a football game, but like 2 weeks went by before anyone knew that Burt Young died. And I'm like, maybe his family wanted some privacy and wanted to keep it quiet before they announced it to the world, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's none of our fucking business, you know? I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like 10 days, like before the news hit, you know?
Yeah, it was October 8th he died.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, I guess the family wanted to have their own private services or whatever, and whatnot, but...
All right, here's the thing about Burt Young. When I found out he died, it said that he was 83, and I would have sworn he was a lot older than that, simply because when he was in Rocky, he looked about 50.
Right?
He was 36 when he did Rocky.
Wow.
That is the roughest looking fucking 36 I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, man. He is one of those guys who I just always thought was old. You know? Yeah. Like
Michael Constantine.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just always old.
Oh, boy. Yeah. One of my favorite roles of his, obviously, was Paulie from the Rocky movies. The first one in particular, just great chemistry with him and Sylvester Stallone and Talia Shire.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He was great in that. And I mean, Chinatown, he was great.
Yeah.
You know, he had a small role in Amityville, too. I remember him from that, right?
I do remember that.
Yep, I'm looking through his filmography here. Holy shit, he was in a zillion movies.
He was. He really was. Once Upon a Time in America, Hope in Greenwich Village, Back to School. Wow.
Yeah, a ton of movies that nobody heard of, but.
And he's got two movies still on the way.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Way of the Warriors and Asleep at the Wheel.
Yep.
Interesting. Oh, he's on a million TV appearances.
Yeah, Jesus. Look at that.
Yeah, man. It was a rough month so far.
It has been.
Mark Goddard, too, from Lost in Space.
Yes.
Passed away. Yep. He did. I met him a ton of times. Don West from Lost in Space, man. He did conventions all the time. Another super nice guy.
Yeah, he seemed like it.
He was 87. Holy shit, that's a pretty good run.
That is. That really is. And that's all the time we have for
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and last but certainly not least, Phyllis Coates, the very first TV Lois Lane. Passed away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was 96.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah, she played opposite George Reeves in Superman and the Mole Man.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and then she played on TV against him. She only was there for the first season, though. So, all right. I think that's it. I mean, we could keep going. There are more, but I think we can move on.
Yeah.
We talked about death for a half hour.
All right. So
people already tuned out.
No doubt. Well, tune back in because we're going to talk about The Exorcist Believer this week on other things. But we've been wanting to talk. Excuse me.
That was an awkward silence.
We've been wanting to talk about it for... It wasn't an awkward silence. It was coffee.
Oh, okay. There we go.
We've been wanting to talk about it for a couple of weeks since we both saw it. And there are a lot of things that you can criticize the movie for. But I'm going to start this off with a little bit of a story. I was at work, and one of the supervisors sent me a message on Microsoft Teams and said she needed to see me. And so I went over and asked her what was going on. And, she told me I'm going to be sharing my desk with somebody. I'm sorry. And anyway, we started talking about horror because she had a Pennywise keychain sitting on her desk. And so somebody else came by who was really into horror as well. And he goes to all the conventions in the area. So we started talking about horror movies and stuff like that. And she mentioned wanting to see The Exorcist. And he said, and he didn't like it. And his big complaint, was there was no music, no background music. So he didn't know what to feel during scenes. And I thought, there is a lot of things to, as I said, to criticize Exorcist Believers for. But lack of incidental music is not one of them. But I looked at it and I said, well, you've seen the original, right? Well, yeah, of course. I said, that had almost no music in it at all. He's like, no, it had tubular bells for one scene, when Chris is walking home from the day shoot. And then during the credits at the end. And then there was one other little bit of music that I remember when the writing is appearing on her abdomen. And that was more of like shock, a loud piece of music more than a song itself, background music. And I said, and that's really it. And he just wouldn't believe me. I'm like, well, watch it again and see for yourself. What can I tell you? And then I watched... I'm going somewhere with this. Then I watched the documentary about the director. What's his face?
William Friedkin.
And the making of The Exorcist. And he talked about how he wanted Bernard Herrmann to do the music. But when he heard what Bernard Herrmann's ideas were for the music, he didn't want it. He's like, well, see you later. And he's, the gist of it was Bernard Herrmann was kind of an asshole anyway, and he didn't even like the movie to begin with. And then he asked somebody else who I forget, and it was a fairly well-known composer. You'd know his name if I remembered it. And he said, Bruno Friedkin wanted something soft and quiet, almost classical. And this guy came up with loud, brash music. And so what little is in there is just, was like filler music aside from tubular bells. And they're really, as I said, there's no music in it. And I think that works better. I don't need music used to tell me how to feel during a scene. I just don't. I'm an adult. I'm almost 60. I can figure out how to feel during a movie,
Yes, I agree. But we've also talked about many times in the past about how a score can really enhance a movie. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it can be both ways. Like, I agree with you. I don't need the music to tell me how I'm supposed to feel, but it definitely can. It definitely can enhance the mood. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a movie like Indiana Jones would not be the same if it didn't have a score.
Right.
You know, but a movie like The Exorcist, it didn't really need it. It added to the documentary type feel to it.
Sure. Sure. And so, yep.
And so I think the fact that he could not get any kind of a score that he liked worked for the film. Because there was very little to none in it. And I don't know if that was a conscious decision by David Gordon Levitt or Joseph Green, or whatever his name is, who directed and co-wrote Exorcist Believer, to not put music in it like he did with the Exorcist. But I seem to think there was more music in Believer than the original Exorcist.
You might be right. The fact that I can't recall is probably the biggest indictment of the film for me.
Good point.
That I walked out of it with the dreaded, I'm indifferent to this movie. Because even if I love a movie, great. Even if I hate a movie, at least it made me feel something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh God, that movie fucking sucked. I walked out of Believer like, all right, well, I didn't hate it, but... You know, I didn't.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling about it too. They tried to explain why they were possessed a bit too much, and when you're talking about a possession movie, you can't really, you know, it just doesn't make sense as to the whys and wherefores and how they were possessed.
Well, it depends. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's just one of those scenarios, at least to me, that is better left unsaid. They alluded to it in The Exorcist when she's playing with the Ouija board in the basement talking to Captain Howdy. But I watched The Exorcist again a couple of days ago, and I really think that was just a red herring. I don't think that William Friedkin and Flatty meant for the reason that she was possessed was because of the Ouija board. Because later on in the movie, when Father Karras, or Damien, asks, you know, are you Captain Howdy? No, it's a psychiatrist who asks, are you Captain Howdy? And, you know, Zuzu doesn't say that he is.
Right.
So I just think that was more of a red herring than anything else. It seemed like Anne Cleavers, they just tried to go out of their way to not only show, you know, why they were possessed, but why Angelica, the black girl, ended up being saved. Because of, and I found this vaguely racist, okay? Because of the, you know, the little voodoo ritual that happened down in Haiti or wherever the fuck it was at the beginning of the movie. Like somehow all African Americans, you know some kind of unorthodox type religion. I just found that a bit.
No, I don't. I mean, look, I'm a white guy, so who am I to say? But I mean, the fact remains that if you do go to the, I mean, my ex-wife is Puerto Rican, and they buy into a lot of, you know, superstition and ritual and stuff. I don't think that was racist, because they were in fact in a place where those things are prevalent. If they were portraying like that somehow every random Haitian family in Brooklyn is practicing voodoo, then I would say, yeah. So, I mean, the fact is, like, like a large majority of the population does believe in that sort of thing. So I don't know if I agree with you there, but I mean, you feel how you feel, but I just don't think I agree.
Well, that's how it seemed to me.
Okay.
All right. I think one of the reasons why I think they tried a little bit harder in Believer to give reasons for the possession is, and they didn't really do that in the original, is William Friedkin is a believer. If you watch the documentary, he talks about his beliefs, and you know, so he comes from someone who believes, and I don't think that David Gordon Green believes any of it. It comes across as an agnostic trying to attempt to justify why this is happening, and you know, there's really no reason why these things happen. They just, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, I get that. I'm guessing like they had to come up with some reason why the girls went into the woods in the first place, you know, and it was try to, you know, the one girl wanted to try to communicate with her mother. Yeah. And then I guess then the implication there is that's what opened the door.
Yeah.
To the spirit, you know. I do agree with you. And when you were talking about like in the original Exorcist, there's that scene between Father Marin and Father Karras where Father Karras says, "Why her? Why this girl?" And Father Marin says, "Well, I think that, you know, the demon wants us to give up or to question why God could love us, you know?"
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. There's no, oh, well, you know, this is what happens when you mess around and things you don't understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, I agree with you. If you're watching a movie like Witchboard or something like that, where it's very clear that people are fucking around with a Ouija board or with a talisman or something, and you're like, oh, you know, you better be careful. And that's your movie's premise of why you got, you know, in a spirit. Okay. But yeah, I like the fact that in the original Exorcist, it's like, well, because demons do demon shit, and that's why they attacked Reagan McNeil, you know?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I thought Ellen Burstyn was just completely wasted in this movie. I just didn't like what they did with her character. If you were going to do some sort of, you know, an exorcism, which they did at the end, obviously, with the group of people, but to have her wander on her own into the bedroom and like start, it just seemed a little hokey when Chris McNeil is holding out her hand and saying, "I cast you out." Like, I'm not a believer, right? I'm not a religious guy, but shouldn't you be like a priest, you know, when you're doing that shit? Like, isn't that the whole point?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And
I
think one of the reasons that she did that is because not too long before that, she talked about how she wasn't allowed in the room during the exorcism. So she felt helpless and useless. And I think this was her way of trying to come to terms with that and not feel useless or helpless in a situation like that.
All right. That's an explanation, at least.
Yeah, I don't know, if it's okay. A valid one, but...
Well, no, but at least it's okay. I'll buy that, you know? All right.
All right. So now, spoiler alert for anybody who cares. You know, and fast forward a couple of minutes, 3-4 minutes, if you don't want to hear this. Now, the guy at work gave Exorcist Believer 2 stars, 2 out of 10. And I would have given it maybe 5. I was more generous.
That's what I did. It was middle of the road for me.
And the reason I gave it 5 was only because of the very last scene. When Reagan walks into that hospital room and holds her mother's hand and they reunite, that was worth 5 stars for me right there. And earlier in the movie, when Chris McNeil is talking about how she wrote the book and pissed off Reagan, she disappeared and she hasn't seen her since. As soon as she said that, I said, Reagan is coming back at the end of the movie and they're going to reunite. It was that obvious just from that one sentence that she said. And I was right. But it made everything else worthwhile just to see that 30 seconds.
And see, that's one of the things that made me hate the movie.
Really?
Because I'm like, really? Like, really? That's what you're going to do? You're going to bring in Linda Blair in the last 30 seconds of the movie? Like, that just seemed so contrived to me.
Well, absolutely.
And
it was
having contrived. Nothing to do with the actual movie. It was just one of those tropes that I can't stand in a movie that was full of them, you know? So, and I knew it was coming a mile away when she was having the conversation and said, oh, I haven't talked to my daughter in years. I immediately thought, oh, but you will by the end of this movie.
Yeah.
You know, I just knew it. Right. So, and that was one of my beefs with the movie. Now, I thought the two young girls, I thought were very good.
They were in physically demanding
roles.
Excellent.
You know, I thought they were very, very good, you know. And some of the other, you know, adult roles were good. Another trope in movies that I hate is the character who says, I want no part of this. I'm not going to help. But you know, they're going to come in at the last second and try to help. And that was the priest, you know.
And I'm kind of glad he got his neck broke, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the Vatican didn't give permission. So I there's nothing I can do. I'm just going to hide in the car. And then you see him walk in the door. And I rolled my eyes so hard I could see my fucking brain.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, we knew. There we go. You know, either you're in or you're out, dude. Like, if you want to, like, if he... It's okay to show him being like, oh, look, the Vatican said no, but I'm behind you all the way. I'm going to help and show him as a little nervous and inexperienced. Okay, that's cool. But the whole, nope, I'm not going to help. You know, the old Han Solo flying in at the last second to save the day. You know, like that, you know, there were just way too many horror movie tropes in it for me. You know?
Yeah, you know, and that was one of the great things about Father Damien in the original movie was, you know, he was a priest who, an experienced priest and a psychiatrist to boot, but had lost his faith.
Yeah.
You know, and he was nervous and he didn't know how to really react, you know, to the point that Father Karras kicks him out of the room at one point. You know, that is far more believable than pretty much everything else in Believer. You know, and the exorcism at the end was really it was exciting and it was fun to watch, but the more I thought about it, when the smoke starts coming up from the girls' mouths and then the woman throws the vinegar in the fire and then the smoke comes out and I'm like, what the fuck is
this? Yeah, like, why is it now all of a sudden a CGI fest? You know what I mean? What made the original Exorcist so creepy was the subliminal, like, the quick subliminal flashes of Captain Howdy, you know, when you weren't expecting it and everything. None of this CGI smoke monster bullshit. I'm like, oh, really? Really? Yeah. You know?
Yeah, you know, Poltergeist did that with the hand beckoning.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's okay because Poltergeist was full of like physical manifestations.
Yeah,
you know, the clown and the tree and like all this shit. Like, okay, you know, it's a poltergeist. You know? I was so looking forward when I started seeing the trailers for Believer. I was so looking forward to it, and I definitely didn't hate it, like the way I hate some movies. But I'm like, oh, okay, so they're gonna make a trilogy, yay! So it definitely was a letdown for me.
For me too. Those were some of the best trailers I've seen for
they were good.
A long time.
They were. So, all right.
And as we said, when we talked about this a very little bit in Messenger, we should have known better because of David Gordon Green directing and co-writing it.
Yes, you can definitely see his fingerprints all over it. That is for sure.
You know, and now I have absolutely no interest in seeing the next two, if they're even made, because I don't think Believer did very well.
I think it did, like, financially, it did a little better than expected.
Really?
Hold on. If only there was a way we could...
Because I know it's on Amazon Prime now.
If only there was a way... okay, so let's see. The Exorcist Believer passes 100 million at the box office.
Wow.
What comes next is complicated. 107.6 million worldwide. $30 million budget. Oh, well, here's the big problem, though. Because the studio shelled out $400 million for the overall rights to the franchise.
Oh, wow.
So they almost have to make a sequel. Even if they slash the budget, they almost have to try to make some of that money.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. So,
oh, well, not my fucking problem. That's Jason Blum's problem.
$400 million for the rights.
He cut the check. Yep.
That seems a bit excessive.
Well, it just goes to show, right, that just because there's a particular intellectual property that is popular doesn't mean you're going to be able to turn it into something. You know what I mean? It's like people also do get a little bit weary. Like, just look at, like, the superhero burnout, that's happening. And the Star Wars burnout that's happening, Or the Pixar, or all of it, People are getting weary, so. Yeah.
I will say this, the Exorcist series on Fox was much better than the movie.
I need to check that out, too.
It was awesome. It was all absolutely right. Awesome.
So before we run out of time, we have like 8 minutes. I did watch Pet Sematary Bloodlines.
Yeah, you mentioned that when we had Tom on.
Another movie that nobody fucking cared about. And
yeah.
I watched it just to see if it was as bad as people said. The answer to that question is no. I've seen some much worse horror movies, but it was one of those movies that I was thinking, who the fuck asked for this and who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the Fred Gwynn character's younger days, Judd Crandall.
Yep.
You know, and how he initially discovers the curse and everything and why the curse exists in the first place. And other than that, it's just generic jump scares and generic slasher movie kills and stuff. And I was like, if this movie was called anything other than Pet Sematary, you'd have a serviceable horror movie. But the problem is it's wedged into a franchise, you know? Yeah. And that's the problem. So I normally always tell people, don't listen to me. Watch a movie, form your own opinion. But in this particular case, spare yourselves the 92 minutes.
Yeah.
Don't even bother.
I only made it 20 minutes before I said, oh, fuck this.
I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you. In fact, the only reason I finished it is because I had it on in the background. I think at the time I was like typing up the programs for Grindhouse or something on my laptop. And I just had it on in the living room at the same time. Like every once in a while, I'd look up and say, oh, that guy got killed. Look at that. You know? So yeah, that was really the only reason, but yeah, save yourselves the time, folks.
All right. Well, and I saw Mike Finnegan's new, Netflix series, his final one and his deal with Netflix.
If you mean Mike Flanagan, Mike Finnegan. I mean, they sound the same, so I guess you could mix them up.
Some fucking Irish name.
Yeah.
Mike Flanagan's Fall of the House of Usher. Now, for those who have been listening a long time, know I absolutely love House on Haunted Hill.
Yep.
Absolutely love that. I did not particularly care for The Haunting of Bly House, and I was indifferent to the third one that he did. Black Mass, I think it was, or something close to
yes.
that.
Yes, yeah, Black Mass.
I liked it, but I was disappointed because I loved House on Haunted Hill so much, I was giving him a lot of leeway. So when I started watching House of Usher, I was a little ambivalent because his track record for me was a bit spotty. But I loved this series. I thought it was fantastic. Each one is based on an Edgar Allan Poe story. Very loosely based on that girl Poe story, with a wraparound of the Fall of the House of Usher. And it is just so well done. I don't want to say anything since you haven't seen it to spoil anything.
I watched the first two episodes last night.
Oh, okay.
And I concur. It is fantastic so far. In fact, I cannot wait for my work day to be over today so I can get back to it. That's how good it is. I want to keep going. From staring at my computer all day yesterday, I just literally couldn't physically keep my eyes open or I would have kept going.
Yeah, no, I get that. And Bruce Greenwood, plays Roderick Usher, and that was the role that was originally going to be played by Frank Langella until Frank Langella started being abused. being Frank Langella, I suppose, and being inappropriate with his female co-stars. So they fired him and brought in Bruce Greenwood. And the funny thing is, whenever I saw Roderick Usher, all I could think about was how Frank Langella would give those lines.
Right.
And I keep thinking he would have been so perfect for this role. And I wish he just could have kept his mouth shut and his hands to himself.
Right. Although, what's his name? Bruce Greenwood is doing a fantastic job.
Oh, he's phenomenal in this.
Yeah.
And Mark Hamill is a fucking...
Right?
In this,
right?
I am so, whatever possessed Flanagan to cast Mark Hamill in the role of the lawyer in this, that muse deserves all the accolades because it's a brilliant piece of casting. Certainly goes against type for him, and he does it phenomenally. He just gets better and better with each episode.
Yeah, I cannot wait to finish it. So far, everybody in it is fantastic. There's a few known names, like we said, Bruce Greenwood, Mark Hamill, Carla Gugino, Kate Siegel. And then there's a bunch of people I never heard of
yeah.
who are all fantastic in their roles. Oh, and Henry Thomas, who has been in all of the Mike Flanagan miniseries.
Yeah, and Henry Thomas going against type in this movie as
yes,
well, too.
Yes,
And he gets even worse.
Okay.
Wait till you see him later on in the series.
Well, I will tell you what. So episode two was based on Mask of the Red Death.
Yep.
And holy shit, dude, that was fucking awesome.
Wasn't it?
Oh, so good. So good. Yeah.
You know, when that acid starts coming down and yeah,
you know, you're just waiting because you know, like, if you know the story, like, you know, something bad befalls the attendees of the party, you know, but oh man. Yeah, that was so good. So good.
And I want to mention Carl Lumbee, who plays the detective. He plays Augustine Dupin, who is another Edgar Allan Poe character.
Yes.
The one with the gorilla, Murders in Rue Morgue.
Murders in the Rue Morgue, yep.
He does a phenomenal job. In fact, for the first episode, I thought it was the guy from Ghostbusters. What's his face?
Oh, Ernie Hudson?
Ernie Hudson, yeah, because he reminded me so much of Ernie Hudson. That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, man, and I already can tell that I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it to catch all of the Edgar Allan Poe references.
Oh, you know? There are so many.
All the names, you know, Prospero, Annabelle yep. Lee, like they all, Eliza, Lenore, the granddaughter's name is Lenore, for yep. Christ's sake, you know? And then they're in the bar in episode one, and there's a raven perched up above yep. the back of the bar, you know? And I'm sure there's 1,000 other Easter eggs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure someone has probably already posted a video of them, you know, 114 Easter eggs you missed in Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah, you know, oh, I'm sure there is.
Tamerlane, the other girl, the other daughter's name is Tamerlane. You yep. know, I'm like, oh, come on. But yeah, it is so good. I can't wait to plow through. I wonder, let's see, when's my last meeting today? Can I put a fake meeting for myself in, you know? Ah, oh, damn it. Nah, I have a 5 o'clock meeting today. Who scheduled that? I need to beat them to death.
Oh, that's
yeah, it's a West Coast client though, so I can't really complain. We are a customer service company. So
yeah.
All right. And anyway, just like that, we are out of time.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Unfortunately.
Well, hopefully you'll finish watching it by next week. We'll talk about it more in depth next week.
Oh, dude, there's no doubt. I was talking to my daughter yesterday, you know, talking about school and stuff because she had midterms this week and whatnot. And then she's like, oh, Dad, because she just finished, you know, she always tells me, oh, Dad, I watched this, I watched that. And I'm like, Olivia, you have to watch The Fall of the House of Usher, you know. And then I told her and she's like, you know, I'm not really like so familiar with Poe yet. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You can go into it not knowing anything about yep. Edgar Allan Poe and it's still a good show. You absolutely. Know, you just watch it. So
now I'm excited to see what Mike Flanagan does with Amazon because he signed a big lucrative deal with them.
Ah, okay, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that he left Netflix after his contract expired, is he got a big, big offer from Amazon. So
excellent.
Looking forward to see what he does there.
They got money to spend. That's for sure.
Oh, no shit. All right, so what have you got going on? I know you're probably just kind of in kickback mode after Grindhouse Nights.
Yeah, so, you know, the dust is settling on that, but no rest for the weary because in 5 short weeks, it will already be time for our annual toy drive and fundraiser to support Scares That Care.
Yes.
Again, it will be at Crossroads on Sunday, December the 3rd. We're doing it on a Sunday so we can have a little bit longer day and we're going to have more entertainment. I already made the announcement that Arena Relive the Rock will be our headlining band. I will have, of course, more announcements coming up. We will have, I can't make the announcement, and I hate fucking saying shit like this, but I was specifically asked by this person not to say anything just yet, but we will have a, you know, a special guest, you know, a special guest host and MC this year, you know, just crossing the T's and dotting the I's and a bunch of other surprises. And it's always a fun event for a good cause. So if you're in the New York, New Jersey area, mark your calendar, Sunday, December 3rd at Crossroads. Doors will probably be at about 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock maybe. But more to come. So that's my big thing right now is planning for that, because time tends to get away from you and it will be here before we know it. I can't believe it's going to be Halloween already as we record this.
Yes.
Dude, Jesus Christ, time is fleeting, man.
Yeah, no,
it really is.
No kidding. And we need to have, what's his face on from Scares the Care?
Yes, Joe Ripple.
Joe Ripple.
We will have Joe. I will have him. I will definitely have him on.
Because we've been saying this for years now.
Yes.
It seems like every time we talk about Scares the Care fundraiser in December, which you've been doing for years now, it seems like every time you do it, you know, we keep saying we need to have Joe Ripple on, and then we just never get around to
it. We did have him on, but you were not available that day. It was a long time ago.
Oh, that's right.
Remember, that's right. You, there was something up. I don't know. It might have been something with your mom or something, you know, taking her to the doctor. There was some reason why you were not available that day. And it was the only day Joe could do it.
Okay.
But I will definitely get him back. In fact, I'll reach out to him today and set it up, because we should have him on.
Yeah, because I definitely want to have him on, because I want to talk to him too this time. Now I'm going to have to go back and figure out what fucking episode that was on. All right. Well, so not that you asked, but I started working on the book again. So now I'm a little over the 50,000 word mark and the end is in sight. And to give you just a little insight into writing, I got to a certain scene in the book where there's this kind of a creature thing that's scurrying around this office of a whorehouse. And it was originally going to be kind of like a baby type thing. Then I realized he did the baby thing and Errors of the Flesh. You know, this is only your fourth book. So don't repeat yourself so early. So, but I had started that right before training, and as I've said ad nauseum, I didn't write during the training, and I didn't write last week, and I just started picking it up again this week, and I had forgotten that that's actually kind of what I was going to do, and I went into a totally different area, and it worked so much better. So sometimes having a little bit of a breather in your writing works to your benefit.
I believe that. I know when I'm working on a script that's how I am. I'll be really into it, and then I have to step away.
Yeah. So cool. That will be done. Probably I'll have it finished by December. And then it'll be out early next year.
Nice. And
yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a lot of fun to write. And but in the meantime, if you haven't picked up any of my other books, you can get them at Amazon, and you can get the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold, and you can also get the audiobook versions at audible.com.
Well, that's fan-freaking-tastic.
Yes, it is. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.